been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win.
Welcome to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting live in studio. I'm your host, Daniel Goodwin. Joining me today in the studio is my esteemed colleague and co-host, special guest co-host, Mr. Tom Balch of Saddle River Range. What's up, Tom?
Doing great. How are you, Dan?
Hey, doing great. Excited to have you here. Thank you so much for coming over and co-hosting today. And our special guest is James Terry of Terry's Landscaping, and you came all the way from the other side of town of Richmond to come over, James.
Yeah, couldn't wait to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you here. We're excited to do a deep dive on your story and learn about your journey as an entrepreneur. And before we jump into that, I'd just like to give a shout out to our colleagues at Sam Houston State University, the entrepreneurship degree program there. In particular, like to shout out to Dean Mitchell Museum, and then also to Chip Matthews, Dr. John Newbold, and
Jamie Collins.
Hey, Jamie, when are you coming back on the show? I know you're listening, so we need to have you back on the show. See, it's been a while since we've talked to you. So we have a lot of entrepreneurs tuning in today. Some of our listeners will be a young aspiring entrepreneur that wants to get to the next level, but we have those who are seasoned and they're looking at how to expand and grow their business. And Tom, we had your story on the show, and we enjoyed that. What did you think about coming on the Shrimp Tank?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We did that maybe 8 or 9 months ago. It was a great experience and a great conversation, and I'm just I'm tickled you brought me back in to be co-host.
Yeah, it was really cool. We did it live in your Crockett room, and your place right there is quite the facility. And if you have not been out to Saddle River Range on 1488, it's what is called referred to as a country club.
Yeah, the press has labeled it a country club, but it's got a dual meaning, I think. And I just want to clear up that people think when they hear country club, they think expensive, and we certainly are not.
Yep, and they have all kinds of activities out there. They've got date night, they've got ladies shooting clubs, and we're looking at hosting a client event out there where I understand that we can introduce some people to Saddle River Range, shoot some guns, and follow all the proper protocols. But then afterwards, we can do a little wine tasting back in the Crockett room when after the guns are all safely stored and put away.
That's exactly right. Guns and alcohol, as you know, don't mix. But if you do it in the proper order, you shoot, you have a ball, you secure those guns, then you could pop a top.
So, James, Terry, I want to ask you just a little bit. We start talking about entrepreneurship here. What possessed you to become an entrepreneur? When I saw that you went to A&M University, and you certainly became credentialed there. You could have got a good job with a good company and taken the secure route, but no, you had to go be an entrepreneur. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so some of my earliest memories, I can remember being 12, 13 years old and not knowing what cold calling was, but I guess it was cold knocking. I would knock on someone's door and just ask them if there's anything that I could do in their lawn, whether it's remulch, trim, mow. I was kind of born and raised in the lawn business. I've had my first business when I was 16 with one of my friends. Got rid of that business when I went to college, had another business in college, sold that business. And, I've just always, I'm not saying a loner, but every time I'd work for somebody, I would always find a reason why I thought I could do it better. So I've had two stints with other companies and, I'm always looking saying, man, I think we could do this X, Y, and Z better. And I've never been able to have ownership of that. So I just said, hey, I'll go do my own thing.
Don't feel bad about that. You know, we entrepreneurs, we don't fit into other people's organizations. Typically we're outcast in sort of a way. We're just not, fit into structured organizations. We're always looking for a way to redo it and redefine. What was your motivation though? Were you motivated by money or independence, or what motivated you?
Yeah, I've always, I wouldn't say I love money, but I think, when you're an entrepreneur, money is definitely a scorecard for you, whether you're doing good or bad. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think over the last 8 years, we've been told that's a bad thing, but always wanted to be the rich guy, you know, and that comes with a lot of hard work. It's nothing's handed to you. So money was a big factor. Me being the boss, I think, not necessarily an ego thing, but wanting to be in charge was a thing for me, wanting to kind of, you know, carve my own path out.
So money is one of the rewards, and I can tell you from personal experience, I've had money, and I haven't had it at different times in my life, and guess what? It's better to have it, right?
Yeah. I think as I've gotten older, though, I enjoy the team building and enriching other people's life and the people building that you see when you can have someone in your organization and watch them, you know, come from the bottom and go to the top. You know, I think it's just a little bit of season and maturity. You stop thinking about just yourself, you know, and that's one of the benefits I didn't see coming, but I'm really enjoying now.
And it's not even just the money for yourself. It's if you make more money in your business, you could buy better equipment and more programs and help your customers even more. And then inevitably, hopefully, that will lead to more money.
For sure. No. I think investing in yourself and investing with your company, with your profits is what it's all about.
So I'll ask you guys something for either of you to comment on. You know, when Tom, you're an entrepreneur. I'm an entrepreneur. And James, you are too. But when you went out and started your respective businesses, you did so with an awareness that half of the small business owners fail. So you know that going in to, you know, when you put it all on the line, Tom, you built a, you know, quite the facility after a big investment, and you knew there was no guarantee of assurances. And James, you start your company and you hire these people and you borrow money and you put it on the line. How do you how did you find the courage to make that step with the knowledge that there's a decent chance here that I'm not going to make it?
Well, I know in my situation with Saddle River Range, I'll tell you, it was a big step. And when I did my business plan 3-4 years ago, you know, we're living in the energy capital of the world here outside of Houston, and oil was $100 a barrel, and now it's not so much. So with the layoffs and people in fear of losing their jobs, you know, it has affected the business a little bit, but not to a critical level. So I have a good core of investors and partners that helped me see it through. And then we come up with this election that just happened, this incredible ride we were just on for over a year with Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton. And arguably, no other business is more affected by the election outcome than the firearms industry. And Donald J. Trump is the best thing probably to happen to the firearms industry. But
I thought Obama was. I thought.
Well, yeah. But the worst thing, and that's where I was going with this, but the worst thing for firearm sales. So people, that whole fear that people had during the 8 years of Obama, that every incident that happened, he said something that
made
people
think. That's when I stocked up, you know. Yeah, that's when I was buying
ammo and guns. And well, people don't have that fear anymore. And that's a great thing that people don't have to fear that their Second Amendment's going to be taken away. But it does affect gun sales. So we're just fortunate. We're multifaceted with, we have archery and other things that'll make up for the lower gun sales now.
What I heard Tom say is that he, reading through what you said, is that the way you pushed through that fear and apprehension is just by having a plan, that you developed a plan, and you did so when oil was good, and then, you know, and then oil took a dump, and then, you know, and then Trump got elected. That's, you know, that reminds me of that quote that's says that everybody has a plan. Mike Tyson, this quote, he says everybody's got a plan until you get punched right in the face.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a punch in the face, right, Tom? Right?
Yeah.
You know, you start the business, and then, you know, oil takes a dump, and, you know, and the local economy contracts. And how about, and that affected housing, and it got to affect your business too, James.
Yeah, so when I started my business, we had a $5,000 CD that was making no interest, of course, and we cashed that out, and that was the money I had. And my plan was I was just going to work harder than anybody else, and we were going to have a kind of unique, you know, some uniqueness to our company. But the other thing that we did is me and my wife really looked at it and said, we had no other bills except our mortgage, and that allowed us to go through, you know, times where I couldn't bring home any money. And if we would have just been living large on one end and not thinking about the other, you know, you kind of have to put it all together, because the money you make in your business or you don't make is going to affect your home, you know, how your house runs. And when you own a business, money's not always guaranteed. So you need to have a plan on that back end, like whether you have reserves saved up for your family to live on, or you've reduced your bills to a point where, you know, you can bring in a minimum and y'all can still live. So that was really my plan from the beginning.
So I think that America is about, you know, we talk about equal opportunity, but not equal outcome. And, you know, you made sacrifices and you took chances that other people are not willing to make and take. And so, you know, do you deserve a reward for that? Absolutely.
Yeah, my operations manager always says short-term pain, long-term gain.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the Shrimp Tank podcast broadcasting to you live from studio. Don't forget you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. You'll be able to pick up James' story of Terry Landscaping and all the other shows on iTunes. And so coming back to your tell us about the launch of the business now, because you've built this thing up. I think it during your peak season you run close to 30 employees, but you started, I heard you say you started with a $5,000 CD. I hope that a listener who sits there and thinks, well, you got to have a rich uncle, or you got to have a lot of money, or you got to be, you know, extra good looking or whatever. That's a lie, isn't it? You started with next to nothing.
Yeah, so I had $5,000 and I went and printed out a bunch of door hangers, and I made some kind of unique coupons on the back. And I remember I was 25, 26 years old. I'm in a neighborhood putting door hangers on. I'm college educated. And beside me are a couple of high school kids doing the same thing. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to work until this thing makes sense. So I think our first year of business, we probably had $300,000 or $400,000 in revenue. And that was basically a crew and a half. I was driving a truck. You know, and it kind of was a hard pill to swallow, because a lot of the people that I went to school with were in a professional environment. You know, our days looked completely different. I had a shovel. You know, they had a pen at a desk.
They had a suit.
Yes, exactly.
Big payment on a little BMW. Yeah,
exactly, exactly. So, you know, the business really did good. And for the first 3 or 4 years, we had a lot of success, what I thought was success. But we did a lot of things bad. I really was a salesperson who owned a business. I didn't track metrics. I didn't know how to capture my overhead on every job. I just knew as long as I kept on selling and money kept on coming to the door, we were eventually going to make it. Well, y'all both know that's a recipe for disaster, and it was a recipe for disaster for us. And it all caught up to us, and we kind of went broke, which was kind of a blessing in disguise. I had to borrow some money from some people, had to ask for that. But what that did is it really taught me to look at numbers, you know, and I really had to go to a business school then. And we've been doing that really the last 3 years, really, really firm, tracking a lot of metrics. And our net profit has just slowly crept up and crept up. And I think it'll continue to do that, because we have our key performance indicators that we track. You know, what's our man hour rate? What's our gross profit margin? You know, how much overhead are we covering on every job we do? So I think those things are very important if you're getting started.
They really are, and data. You just need to pore over that data and dissect it and find out, like you said, the key indicators and moving on and what's working and what's not working, and eliminate what's not working. Do you have any professionals on the business side that you utilize? Like in our business, I have, of course, a bookkeeper and somebody who does our books every day. But I have somebody that I pay on a professional side, a part-time CFO that comes in and kind of looks at the business from a 30,000-foot view and gives us a little assistance on direction to go and kind of dissects those numbers with me, alongside me. So we know exactly what you were talking about. Do you have anybody assisting you in that realm?
So we just changed some things. Over the last 2 years, we have been outsourcing our bookkeeping, but the problem with the P&L is it's always a month behind. You know, you get your P&L on the 15th of March and you're looking at February's numbers. Well, stuff that happened 45 days ago, you can't affect. So we just brought our bookkeeping in-house, and every Tuesday we have a meeting where we look at the week prior. You know, every week we're going to look at it every week. I'd used a business coach in the past locally, a guy named Glenn Smith, a great guy. And he was a business coach, almost like a counselor, because you're going through so much stuff and you're questioning every decision you make. And he really helped me through that. I've kind of matured through that, and I work with a couple of consultants that I meet with monthly. And then we actually go to other landscape operators, you know, other companies around the nation every quarter. And we did what we were talking about earlier, which is R&D in my industry means rob and duplicate. What we see somebody else doing good, we want to bring it back home and see if it fits in our business.
But I really like how you explained that you prepared yourself for this journey as an entrepreneur. And then after you had your degree, you were willing to go out and hang the door hangers and maybe do things that other people we're not willing to do. So you need to think about that if you're a young aspiring entrepreneur. If those sort of activities and working long hours and, you know, risking it all, you know, if that sounds you know, scary to you, that not everyone is cut out to be an entrepreneur, and there's nothing wrong with building your way up in life in a corporate position. I have plenty of friends that did very well, you know, in a corporate setting or structure. And it'll bring me back after the commercial break. I want to ask you guys if you think that entrepreneurs are born or are they created somewhere along the way. So producer says we need to run to commercial break. We'll be right back. Terry's Landscape is a professional landscape contractor servicing commercial and high-end residential accounts. We serve the greater Houston area and take great pride in our customer service and quality of work. For further information, visit us at terryslandscape.com or call our office at 713-574-0058. And we're back from commercial break live here on Shrimp Tank Podcast. The show for entrepreneurs, and joining me in the studio today, Tom Balsh of Saddle River Range, and also James.
Terry. You're having a hard James time, Terry. Danny.
Well, it's like Ricky. It's today. Like Ricky Bobby. James Terry is. He's got a first. You know, James and Terry. You can mix that up. Yeah,
and the company's his last name.
And the company's his last name. So
everyone calls me Terry.
Yeah,
that didn't start happening until I started my company. So if you want to call me Terry, just feel free.
I almost did it.
James or Terry will work, right?
Yes.
So asking you guys about entrepreneurs. Are entrepreneurs born or are they created somewhere along the way? What do you think?
I think you're born an entrepreneur. I know a lot of people that have tried. I know people that are trying right now. They have a great product, a great idea, but they're not willing to make the sacrifice. And that's a big part of it. Another thing, too, I mean, we live in a nation where you can tap your head and you can be anything you want to be. It's just a matter of how much you want to go get it. If you really want it, it's going to happen. If you're just going to, you know, put in half the effort, you're going to get half the results. So I think it's really up to you.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a mindset that you're probably born with. Now, can things in your life growing up assist you with that or deter you from that? Absolutely. I mean, my father was a business owner, and he started a small little restaurant that grew into a large catering hall, and I started washing dishes with him when I was 10 years old and saw it from the ground up and worked my all the way up to the manager, and that's how to do it. See it from the ground up and move your plan forward, and then just apply it to something that you love. His passion was food and restaurant and cooking, and mine was guns and shooting.
Because Tom, you've been both actually. You have a career as an entrepreneur, but you also were a civil servant for many years.
I was 25 years in the Secret Service, and you know, after I got out of business school, I applied to the Secret Service and got accepted, and had a great career. It is actually what made me become an entrepreneur here, because that's where I learned, you know, my craft of shooting and training and doing all the things that have to do with guns and self-protection, and I applied what I learned into the entrepreneur field.
What a natural transition for you. And then you must have had James at a early insight, because you went and your degree was in horticulture and agronomy at Texas A&M University. So you already had a bend towards this sort of, you said you started working and, you know, doing landscaping or, you know, mowing, and you knew you wanted to be in this sort of field.
Yeah. I don't know why I gravitated to this. I didn't have, you know, a grandmother who liked to garden or anything really that was crazy. It was just kind of a no barrier entry way to make money. And so we had a family friend who had a business, in the same thing, and he sold it, I think when he was like 21 for like $130,000. And that sounded like $1 million to me. And I thought, well, hey, you know, this ought to be good enough. But my next goal in life, as I'm getting older, is I think once you have, or you're in some sort of a service company or in the business world, once you figure out a model, and this can be a recipe for disaster or success, is trying to duplicate that model in another industry, right? Some people think they're good at one thing, they're going to be good at everything, and they lose all their money. But I've seen some people who are good at one thing, and they've went into other stuff, and they've done really, really well because they know to look for key performance indicators from the beginning.
Right. So what about some skills that you would say are essential for any entrepreneur to be successful? What's your insights on that?
I would say grit and determination, just keeping after it. You know, I mean, it's just, to me, it's a matter of how hard you want to work. You don't need to be a great salesperson. You don't need to be an accountant. You can always hire where you're weakest at. I'm completely unorganized. I have to have a good operations manager or we don't function.
Yeah.
You're the hardest person in the world to get hold of, isn't
Yeah, I am. Well, she's trying to contact me in spring as well. I mean, this is kind of busy for us.
I think it was the first time we actually spoke was this morning when you turned up.
Okay, so you hire out, you're a team builder. You're not the one guy with every single skill set that's essential for your company. You find other people that have strengths where you're not. Are you more the vision for the company?
I think it's turning into that. For years, I've been the sales for the company. And I can project manage. I'm not good at it. It's not the best use of my time. I definitely hire my weakness.
Yeah, so I think sometimes that a good motivator is fear can be a good motivator because, you know, plan B, I guess if your company were to crash, you could always go take a job and work for somebody else. I mean, that's probably not that exciting of an idea for you, I wouldn't think.
No, I mean, fear has been a big motivator for me because, you know, if you're not measuring the stuff we're talking about, you think you're doing well. I mean, I've had nothing. I mean, I've had no money. I was like, how are we going to make payroll? I've needed money to come in. It's been scary, you know, and we're still, I think there's four phases to a business. There's startup, growth, maturity, and death. And we're definitely still in the growth phase. I mean, we have a vision where we want to go. And I think as long as you're in that growth phase, you're always going to have problems like cash flow, you know, hiring the right people. I mean, our big challenges as we go forward is who do we hire and what is their exact role? Kind of building a corporate structure, but we're not a corporation. We're a small business, but hiring those right people.
Yeah. But I heard you talk about, checking in with other business owners and becoming a student of the numbers and how business operates. I think that's going to be what makes your business successful because probably a lot of your competitors are not doing that. You mentioned the low cost of entry. Well, that's probably the good news and the bad news. You know, the good news is you were able to get in without having, you know, a rich uncle to mm-hmm. seed your company. But the bad news is that, you know, lots of other people can get in and compete with you and they don't need a lot of money. But I would be willing to wager that not that many of your competitors have become a student of the numbers like you have to actually understand your business.
Yeah, it's we deal with some national things. We go to a national conference every year, which just focuses on a business. We're always the only person from Houston. Always. I mean, I don't know why. I saw another company from Dallas. I think Texas in general is just such a right-to-work state. There's a lot of companies in the Midwest and the Northeast. They really put a high value on education. There's nothing professional you have to be about being a landscaper, unfortunately. And that's one of our goals, is to really become a true professional in our market, where people look at us and say, these guys really pay attention to everything.
Well, I was asked, Tom or James, have either of you studied or read any of the E-Myth book series? Have y'all looked at any of that about the concept of working on your business versus in your business? I think what you're talking about is the busyness. We can all get caught up in the busyness of running our business. But in the E-Myth book series, they talked about breaking away and actually working on your business instead of in it. Tom, I can tell that you're doing that because you guys are so creative in all of the different events that you put on to bring people into a gun place that would otherwise never wander into that. So you must time block or set aside some time to focus on strategy. Do you do that structured, or are you kind of thinking as you go, or how do you do that?
We do it as we're moving along. We're always looking for new ways to get people in the door and new products to sell. And I love, James, your rob and duplicate.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant way to put it, because that's what we do. Look, we don't need to recreate the wheel on everything. There's other people that are doing this, other gun ranges that are doing this, other gun stores that are doing it. And if we're not their competition, like we discussed earlier, they're willing to help you. This is a great industry, and I'm sure your industry is the same. When you go to these trade shows or you go visit other people are willing to help you and tell you what they're doing, what's the newest equipment out there to assist your business in landscaping. And that's what I do as well, just try to research it and find new great things. And
R&D, you don't have to recreate that.
That's it.
You don't have to think. You don't have to be the inventor of every good thought.
Yeah, and I think, too, what you were saying, though, is when the business first started, I used to be Tom Brady. Now I'm Bill Belichick. And my next step is to be the general manager and to hire a Bill Belichick, someone in between. You know what I'm saying? That's
yeah,
really in between.
Absolutely.
So I think as I get more time for myself, for example, I don't take a tremendous amount of vacation, but I enjoy my time away because it clears my head. It really lets me step away from all the day-to-day stuff, the calls, everything that comes through, and I get clarity. And you can ask my team, when I come back from somewhere, I've got 4 pages of notes. And we're going to throw away half of the stuff that I've written down, and we're going to use half the stuff. But, you know, you can tap into that other side that you don't ever get a chance to when you're at work every day.
So this is a great takeaway from this show, is that you don't have to be the creator of original thought. Catherine, it reminds me of Bob Fuller, who we had on the show. He's a former Navy SEAL, mm-hmm. and he started a company that actually was modeled after a successful business in New Jersey. And golly, they sold that thing for $29 million.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
you know, I
was
think
it assisted
what,
living?
Assisted living for Alzheimer's care patient facilities. And I think what they looked at is, hey, here's a good model. And here's a guy who's, you know, several states over, who's willing to share best ideas and practices. You called it R&D. What was that?
Rob and duplicate.
Rob and duplicate. It wasn't research. I've heard it swipe and wipe before. You know, but that's an important takeaway. You know, that Tom, you said you went to a lot of these other gun ranges and you saw what they were doing well that you liked, and you incorporated some other people's ideas in your business, right?
Absolutely. I went to visit so many of them before we opened. At the time, it was a fairly new concept 4 or 5 years ago. These, as you called them, country clubs, and the press is labeled country clubs. So there wasn't that many, but, you know, some had certain things that I didn't want to put in there. There's some that had restaurants with full bars in them. That's not a direction I wanted to go. But some did have archery in a simulator, so I took some of those ideas and implemented.
So, listeners, take away James Terry's idea, R&D, that if you're sitting there thinking, hey, I've got to invent the next app that's going to make me a gazillion dollars, and, you know,
I've tried it. I didn't. It didn't work.
Yeah. You know what? I love having people on the show that are doing great businesses and things that we all need. We don't have to worry about your business being shipped over to India and, you know, outsourced like that. Producer says we need to run to another commercial break. We're going to be right back. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting to you live from studio today. According to a recent Forbes business article, 9 out of 10 business owners are overpaying their taxes. Ouch! Contact the team at Provident to explore how you can pay only what you are legally, morally, and ethically required to pay. After a simple, no-obligation assessment, we'll determine if we could substantially reduce your tax burden, and if so, we'll develop a tax savings plan utilizing our exclusive tax blueprint. Visit us online at ProvidentWealth.com, ProvidentWealthLLC.com, or call the office at 281-466-4843. And we're back live in studio with James Terry of Terry's Landscape out of Richmond, Texas. Young entrepreneur, started his company from zero. You had a $5,000 CD, got cashed in to start this business.
Yes, sir.
Up to 30 employees. You're building, growing, expanding. You're finding research and development. Now we want to cue in on a few of the nuggets that you think will be takeaways for our listeners. And, you know, a couple of questions about that. You talked a lot about research and development, or finding other ideas that other people have. And then you talked about knowing your numbers and strategic planning. You talked about work ethic. But tell us a little bit, maybe one of the funniest or scariest stories you've ever had since you opened up the business.
Yeah, this actually happened last week. So one of our ideal clients is HOAs, the commercial maintenance on HOAs. And we had someone call the office and they say, your company just ran over my dog. I've called the cops, they're on their way, and my dog's dead. And I can see Miranda in her office having this face like, and she goes, what community do you live in? she said the community, and she goes, "Ma'am, we don't work there anymore. We haven't worked there in 6 months." And I thought, "Oh my God, we just."
But did we run over the dog?
No. We're not even on that side of town. I thought, man, we just dodged a huge bullet because I would not want to have to deal with that at all.
Yeah, that'd be, what do you do? I mean, just doggone. Golly.
I'm not.
Okay. That's good. So, hey, you're a reader and you're a student of the business. What's, in fact, you noticed one of my books here on my bookshelf, Traction. Any you know, top one or two books that pop into mind regarding business development, ownership, entrepreneurship that you'd want to share with our listeners?
Yeah. Have you ever heard Start With Why by Simon Sinek?
I've heard of Simon Sinek, but I have not heard of that book, Start With Why.
Yeah, that's
tell us about that.
That's a great book. It, you know, we really know what we do. It really defines why you do it. And it goes through other companies and it really explains who's a visionary of the company and who's the guy in the background operating it and how you need to have both. One of my favorite books is The Great Game of Business, and we run our company on that, which follows a company in the 30s that was they manufactured tractors out of Springfield, Missouri, and they were bankrupt. They started applying metrics. And then one thing that we do that I really love is we have metrics that, you know, our KPIs, but then we reward our guys if they hit those KPIs. So we have to really define for them, like, what's your Super Bowl? How do you know if you're winning, you know? And so Thursday or tomorrow morning, we grade our guys on how good their properties look and their efficiency, and then we reward the team that does the best. And so tomorrow morning will be our monthly luncheon with the rewards where we'll share our P&L from the month. We do open book management and just really let the guys know, you know, here's what we're tracking and here's how you're doing. You know, you have to be honest with the people who work with you. If you don't show them anything, they're just going to assume that you're making a bunch of money. But
right,
sometimes you're not making anything.
Right. Pre-show warm-up, we were talking a little bit about politics. You know, hey, we're not afraid to go there, right, on this show. Talk about politics. But we were just wondering about how the Trump administration, you know, some of the, how the policies may be affecting your business. And if they were to call you from his office and ask you what can the federal government do to help the small business owner, James, what would you tell them?
Well, a couple things. One, I'm afraid to get over 50 employees as it stands today. That's going to limit our growth. It's something in our industry I don't think that we could take on and still, you know, it's going to affect our customers because our pricing has to go up. So that's
Tom, are you over 50?
Not the equivalent, not full-time equivalents. We have mostly part-time, but we're sitting right about 50 in total employees. But again, most of them are part-time.
That's kind of a big point you bring up. And you sound like you're headed towards 50.
Yeah, as a service company, though, you can't have part-time employees because the guys leave on a truck and go do something. So you can't, what am I supposed to buy an extra truck and have a morning and a night? It's hard to do. When you're a retail person and they come here and then they can work, you know, 6 hours and leave. So that's a big challenge that we face in the service industry. Another thing, too, is a franchise tax is just ridiculous. Once you get over $1 million in revenue, everything over $1 million, I think you get hit with 2% of.
Right.
So
people don't realize, you go into a place and you look at some of the infrastructure and you think, well, okay, that guy bought that, paid for it. Do you really own it? Not exactly if you're a business owner, because they tax you on the stuff that you've already paid.
Yeah.
You don't have any debt on, you've already paid it, you think you own it, but you get taxed on, you know, I'm talking about personal property tax. Mm-hmm. So in case we have a listener not sure what we're talking about, this 50 owner metric, would you explain that to the listener?
Oh, if you have 50 employees?
Yeah.
Yeah, so once you get 50 employees, you're mandated to have health care through Obamacare in your company, and you're mandated to provide it for your employees, which every good owner, I think, wants to do everything they can to help their employee out, but you know, for me to get to 51 employees and the government to see me the same size as Exxon is completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, that's my big thing.
Yeah. We're putting in steps to make sure that we're complying with everything they make us comply with, but that's a huge nut if they do impose that on us. So
you're putting in steps to limit your growth or to hire people for less hours because you don't want to have to deal with the government mandate. That's just ridiculous. It's stifling growth.
It really is. And hopefully, going back to this new administration, hopefully they are going to address it. I know they gave it the old college try, but it just can't be forgotten. It has to be fixed.
They're going to let it implode on its own. And So it reminds me, Tom, when you came into the building here where we're at, we're in the Reagan building here at Provident, and you saw a picture of Ronald Reagan on the wall. And I know by guarding presidents, you're a student of presidents and the historical significance of different presidents, but it made me think of one of the quotes from Ronald Reagan. He said, the scariest words in the world are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Yeah, right? Exactly right. Cause
that's like the scariest thing a business owner wants to hear is a federal government bureaucrat coming in to try to help you, you know, manage your business.
Yeah,
it's no good. Just look how the post office is ran.
Yeah.
So let's, Tom, what do you think? We want to pepper this guy a little bit and, you know, with some questions here. You want to go to our hot or not section? What do you think?
Yeah, I had one question that
sure.
You reminded me of before we go to that, Dan, and that you brought up the great state of New Jersey. I'm originally from the great state of New Jersey.
But the Garden State.
The Garden State. But very happily now a Texan, and all my kids are Texans, and we love it and we want to change a thing. But in New Jersey, I worked for a landscaping company for 2 summers when I was in college, and it was great. And I assisted them during the off season as well. So I noticed you go from a higher number of employees, obviously, mm-hmm. in the season, and then you take it down. But how much work do you have in the off season, and what kind of work is that? I know, you know, we cut our lawn every other week and mm-hmm. trim our bushes every other week as opposed to every week. But what they do in the Northeast is in that off season, they snowplow and they do things like that.
Big money.
So what is your plan?
So our business is if we had a perfect mix, it'd be 70% commercial maintenance and probably 30% construction, whether that's design, build, residential, or working with developers. The benefit of that is we're most profitable in the winter because our contracts are paid in 12 equal payments. So in the winter, we don't have a lot of labor. We're getting paid the same amount. In the summer, we have a lot of labor and we're getting paid the same amount. So our vision is to get as many commercial maintenance contracts as we can, and that's our basis of revenue. I think that kind of is defined as a healthy company in our industry, because design, build, and construction will go up and down with the economy, but really commercial maintenance will always be there.
Yeah, it's they're more stable, more stable contracts. So. Okay, so we got this little game,
yeah.
Little fun game. You got it, Tom?
Yeah.
Hot or not? It's a segment, and we're going to ask you some serious questions.
Got it.
All right. And you want to go first, Tom?
Sure. barter. Do you barter with people? And if so,
hot.
Hot?
That's hot.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Donald Trump art of the deal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I barter with vendors especially.
Yeah.
Some of them like us, some of them don't, but... You're going to get bartered with.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, if it makes sense for both parties, it's creativity. You ever do anything like that, Tom?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I just met with a marketing company the other day, and they were as excited to come in and work with us at Saddle River Range as I was to get a marketing company's eyes on what we could do better. And he was almost giddy when I told him that I'd give him a range membership in exchange for some of his services.
I love it. I love barter. I love the idea of it. I just did a barter deal myself. I trade in Chris Martin, that owns Bay Flats Lodge in Seadrift, mm-hmm. Texas. If you're listening,
going to Seadrift on Friday.
Do you know Chris?
Yeah, I'm not going to his place, but I'm going to Seadrift on Friday, taking some customers out.
Okay, so he's got a rocking place on the Texas coast, and I swap him out a ski week at our ski condo every week in exchange for me being able to take 4 guests for 3 nights and lodging and fishing and hunting, the whole package deal. And it's a great swap. He's happy, I'm happy.
Good for you,
yeah. It works. So how about hiring family members, hot or not?
Which family member?
Yeah, the idea.
The
ne'er-do-well cousin.
Yeah, I would say hot. I would say there's a few that I'd hire, a few that I wouldn't. So I'll go with hot on that one.
Case by case, right?
Case by case, yeah. 100%.
Tom?
Leverage. You know, very interesting to hear starting this on a $5,000 CD, which was a great use for that money because CDs are going nowhere. Hopefully they can only go one way but up. But financing more projects, financing more equipment, hot or not on that, or just use the cash that you're making?
Yeah. I don't leverage anything in family life, but I leverage quite a bit in business life. Yeah. I will take on debt if it's what I call it operating debt, right? So this year I've bought two trucks, four tractors. I mean, we're $180,000 into new stuff, and we're 3 months in. So operating debt for sure. I will take – I'm a little more riskier than other people. For 100%.
Well, most businesses have to, Tom. You know, I mean, that's a multi-million dollar facility you have out there. I doubt you would whip the $100 bills out of your back pocket and made that thing happen, right?
Yeah, no, banks were instrumental in getting us started, and you know, we're fortunate that the revenue we're taking in every month is paying the bills. But you know, when things break down or when you need more stuff, I mean, you got to be able to turn to someone or companies to help you out with that.
And you got to be smart about it, though, too.
Yeah, that's right.
You just can't think that you need, you know, it's better if you go to the bank to ask for $1 million when you need 100 grand.
So let's think about this for just a second. You know, it wasn't very long, a couple of years ago, that ExxonMobil had to go to Congress and explain, you know, all this cash on the balance sheet some sort of way, okay? Now, you know, and I don't know what, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars or whatever, Apple Computer, you know, if you love Apple Computer, they've got a massive amount of cash on the balance sheet. But they also have bondholders. So yeah, it makes you wonder, why does when Tillerson was at Exxon, why didn't he call up the CFO of ExxonMobil and say, hey, why don't we take some of this cash and just wipe out all our bondholders? Simple answer is that they can pay a bondholder, you know, 6% on a bond. And they can take that cash on cash in their core business models. And they can earn, you know, 15, 18, 20% on their money with their money. So a certain amount of, you know, leverage and, you know, it can be a good and healthy thing. I think we'd all like to have our small business with no debt, but sometimes you have to do it to grow, right?
Yeah, it matters if you're in that growth stage or maturity phase, like I talked about. When you hit maturity,
maybe you wipe it out.
Yeah.
Okay, so having a business plan, hot or not?
On fire, hot, must.
Okay, you stick pretty close to it? Because that's a moving target, right?
That is a moving target, 100%. But you got to know where you're going.
Yep. Okay,
yeah,
good.
Absolutely. Business plan is critical, especially if you want some of that financing. The banks will require you
the first
show
time
how
I went to a business
it.
The first time I went to a bank to get money, I had no money, and they said, "Let me see your balance sheet." I said, "I don't even know what that is."
And look at you now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the truth.
These bankers are sharp. They know a lot about business. We did a commercial banking episode live in the classroom at Sam Houston State University, and Ray Sanders that teaches that for the university prepare these students for why you have to, you know.
And you need to treat your banker like a customer. You need to tell them everything that's going good with your business. I mean, that's how we treat our banker, is like it's a customer. And she really appreciates that. I mean, I've got to schedule an email to her today and just let her know what we think our second quarter sales will be. But once you get a good relationship with the bank, you really need to do everything you can to keep that as transparent as possible.
Tom, you got one more?
Yeah, advertising. We talked about door hangers earlier, but what kind of advertising you do for
you? So we've matured from that. We just did a great event last week. We called Ladies Night Out. We're big on getting with other vendors that service service the same core customers we do, and we host specific events for ideal customers. So one of our ideal customers is property managers. So we hosted a Ladies Night Out. We had 130 attendants. We had a casino night for them. We raffle off purses, you know, and it's always nice when you can create your own environment with the customers.
Catherine perked up over there when you.
I like purses. She's like,
you like purses?
Were they Louis Vuitton purses?
Yes.
Well, that's creative. You don't typically think of a guy in the landscaping business that's putting on client events like that.
Well, it was us, and the trash man was there. Kevin?
Wow. Yeah, Kevin.
Kevin.
Shout out to Kevin.
Yeah. Well, you got another question coming up later about the best looking entrepreneur, and he's definitely the winner.
Oh, all right.
Yep.
Catherine, second that. So, James, I want to ask you this, kind of shifting gears. The producer over there is telling me we need to move it along or wrap it up. We just got a little bit of time left. What would you say to someone who has tried and failed and needs that boost to pick themselves up and try again?
Funny you should bring this up. I just had a conversation with somebody about this yesterday. But like I said earlier, I mean, if you have the desire and you're willing to work, I mean, I can remember working Saturdays. I can remember working some Sundays. You live in a world, or you don't live in a world. You live in a country where you can literally be anything that you want to be. And the only person stopping it is you. I mean, they say your greatest competition's in the mirror, and that's very true. So just go get it. Stop making excuses. Stop thinking you got to have a perfect plan. go do it. If you mess up, learn from it and readjust. You're going to fall a lot more before you have great success, but just stay after it.
I love it. You're talking about the American dream, and this is the country that has the American dream, and it's not the UK dream. It's not the Venezuela dream. Sorry, oh, Catherine. Thank you. It's not the African dream. It's the American dream, and I think that's largely what our show's about here is entrepreneurship, is that you can come here. You can be an immigrant. You don't even speak the language. You just have the shirt on your back.
Immigrants have a lot more success than...
I love immigrants.
Yeah.
I love immigrants because they
thank you.
You're welcome. They covet the American dream.
For sure.
You know,
that's
you
why
watch.
Come
they'll come over. They don't speak the language. They'll like live eight in an apartment for a while, save their money, eat beans out of a 50-pound bag. They'll save their money up, and they will be a business owner in a few years. That is the American dream. Well, what did you say? You can come here. You can be anybody. You can do anything.
Yeah.
And your greatest competition. So, James Terry, Terry's Landscape, thank you so much for being our guest. Tom Balch of Saddle River Range, thank you so much for being our co-host on the show. Don't forget you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. One last thing, James. How would someone get in touch with you if one of our listeners wanted to get in contact
with you?
Yeah,
we would love – we're trying to grow our design-build segment part of our business even more this year. So you can go to our website. It's under construction right now. I don't know if there's a backlink up on it. It's terryslandscape.com. You can also call our office at 713-574-0058.
And we'll see you here next week.
Welcome to the shrimp tank, doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This is just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general from the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never. Going hard as ever, the results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.